You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
And that was Prince Charming by Adam and the Ants. One of my favourites, actually. I loved Adam Ant when I was a certain age, and I'm sure a lot of young women listening will understand what that feels like. Hello and welcome to the Stone Tapes. What a great show we have for you today. This is our steampunk special in honour of The Asylum this month, which takes place in Lincoln on bank holiday weekend, starting from the 28th officially, isn't it, through to the 31st of August. Really looking forward to it myself. And with that in mind, I'd like to introduce some of my special guests today. We have with us Lady Elsie, John Naylor from the Victorian Steampunk Society.
Hello.
Thank you for coming in, guys. And of course, we've got the gang with us. We've got Patricia H. Ash.
Hello.
Newly named Hottie by Alex Lefchuk on the midweek drive tonight.
That's not actually what the H stands for. Mom, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
Just take it.
We liked it. I think that's going to be your new name. And of course, David J. Howe.
Hello.
And also in the studio, we have Christy Bond with us. Hi, Christy.
Hi.
And of course, Alex, our wonderful producer. And later on, he's a very silent producer in this show, though. And later on, of course, we have with us Robin from Life from Wales as our reviewer from Starburst magazine. And of course, we will have the wonderful Joshua Lou Friedman. Looking forward to a new cocktail this month, guys. What about you?
And I think we're going to have an interesting interruption from Hair Doctor.
We certainly are. Laboratory
in Lincolnshire.
We certainly are. Now, I'll let David explain a little bit about who is Hair Doctor.
Oh, Hair Doctor is one of the best steampunk inventors, geniuses, masterminds, madmen that we have in the country. His reputation is second to none. The guy is extraordinary. The things he can do with cogs and bits of string are just to behold.
So the mind boggles.
I'm looking
it?
Forward to seeing what nefarious delights he has for us for the steampunk weekend. It's going to be great.
Awesome. And of course, we're going right over to Patricia's corner today, and we're going to hear what review have you got for us this month?
Well, this month I've got something that's steampunk. It's a bit steampunk. It's called Mécanique, A Tale of the Circus Trisalti, and it's by Genevieve Valentine, and it was absolutely fantastic. It's rather a literary science fiction thing. It's like reading somebody's dream. It's very difficult to say what it's about without completely spoiling it, so I'm just going to describe the setting with lots of adjectives, because it seems to be something that produces adjectives in the mind. So it's a post-apocalyptic situation. Man has pretty much destroyed itself and the world, and there is a circus. The ringmaster of the circus has this strange ability. She repairs people with mechanical parts. So the strong man in her circus has this metal spine and brass ribs, and all of her trapeze artists have hollow metal bones. And saying anything else would be giving it away. It's just beautiful. It's non-linear. The story jumps around quite a bit, but you get the whole picture eventually. It's rather like watching a circus, and it leaves you with that sort of vivid imagery. So I thought it was absolutely fantastic and really, really beautiful. And David J. Howe has a reading from it for us today.
We're the circus that survives. Boss claims we were always around. She shows me glue paper posters with the edges singed and flaking. The circuses are owned by a series of brothers with names I don't know and peopled with acts I've never heard of. I recognise Grimaldi, the brother's false name. Other than that, there's nothing much to them but worn-out pictures. I don't even know where she's found them. Some of the circuses have an eagle mascot. Some have a lion or a flaming hoop or an eight-point star. The emblem of Trasalti Circus is a griffin in profile, her hinged wings outstretched. A tattoo of that crest covers the top half of each of Boss's wide, pale arms. You can see them in the ring, though the tattoos look like lace sleeves in the lantern light. You wouldn't guess if you didn't already know. You have to really know what you're looking for when it comes to her.
So that was Mécanique by Genevieve Valentine. Definitely read it. It's absolutely fantastic. It's not a style that's usually found in genre fiction. So that's why I thought it really stood out to me, just because of its vivid beautifulness.
Are you going to give it a grade this week?
Oh, yeah. 8 out of 10. Oh,
wow. And marvellous. And very provocative reading, David. Fantastic. I think we're going to go over to Fighting Trousers now by one of my favourite steampunk musicians, Professor Elemental.
Ah, Jeffrey. What's that you have in your hand, boy? Pass it over. A telegram. Oh, dear. Seems someone has been biting me. Fetch me my trousers in town for two gentlemen rhymers. Leave town by the end of this instrumental. Yours, etc., etc. Sincerely, and so forth, Professor Elemental. I don't like your tweet, sir. Will teach you the professor's ready. Not. Let's see who strikes the loudest. Lou. Put on my fighting trousers. Oh. Sorry, I'm sorry, Jeffrey, but it gets my goat. Gets my dander right up. It's bloody told him. No, no jazz solo. This is supposed to be a diss song. Jeffrey, get off the drums.
And that was Professor Elemental, Fighting Trousers. Lady Elsie, here we is, Professor Elemental.
Professor Elemental is our steampunk rapper. He will be at the asylum, so come and meet him yourself.
Where will he be, John?
He's going to be playing the Empire Ball on Sunday night at the Dead Dog Party on Monday. Both of those are sold out. However, he'll also be on stage in the castle at 1:30 on Monday afternoon.
Oh, that sounds awesome. So, if you've got a day pass, at least you can go into the castle on Monday and you will get to see Professor Elemental live.
And he's fighting trousers.
And he's fighting trousers. And I can thoroughly recommend it. He's brilliant and he's also really personable.
Mm, he's a lovely, lovely guy.
Hopefully Geoffrey will behave as well.
Absolutely. Keep an eye on Geoffrey. Yes.
Got to keep an eye on him. And on the phone, we have, I believe, Herr Doctor. Hello there,
hello.
Herr Doctor.
Hello. Hello, Sam.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well. I would just like to admit straight away that I'd completely forgotten you were going to call me. But never mind, I'm sure I can make up something as I'm going along.
That's all right. We're used to eccentric doctors.
Yeah, there's obviously something particularly nefarious was occupying you, you know, taking your mind away.
What have you been up to in your laboratory this week?
I've mainly been building a small robot.
Wow.
A small robot.
As you do.
Just a small one?
Well, yes.
How small is small?
Well, it depends how close you stand to it, really. It's a scale model of a full-size one, and I haven't decided how big the full-size one will be yet.
How awesome.
And are you just making the one?
For now.
It's going to be a very small invasion of Lincoln.
Perhaps all I need is one.
Ah. Wow. Well, that does sound nefarious. It does. Herr Doctor, we have with us in the studio, we've got Lady Elsie and John Naylor from the Victorian Steampunk Society, who I believe you know very well.
Hello, Herr Doctor.
Never heard of them.
I've got to admit, I'm wearing my Her Doctor's Minion badge right now.
Yes. Wear it with pride, just like I do.
So what will you be getting up to, Her Doctor, over the steampunk weekend that's coming up?
First and foremost is socialising. Second and hindmost is telling people how to make things.
Fantastic.
And when will you be doing that? What part of the weekend will you be describing how, well, doing your talk on how to make things?
Well, I believe there is a maker's tent in the castle, and I think I'm down for a slot at 12:30 on Monday. I'm not entirely sure why I've got 12:30 on Monday, as that's the last day of the whole thing, so I might not be that good at explaining things.
You might not be compass mentis by that aspect.
Those are the words I was struggling towards. You know.
Well, we've been all on the slow gin tonight as well, so I'm with you on that one already. You know, you can't be around steampunks without having some gin.
I've been on the fast acting stuff, I'm afraid, rather than the slow stuff.
would that be some stuff of your own invention?
No. This is what I've been recommended by, using something called the internet. I decided to use something called Google. It's very futuristic. To find out which supermarket did the best cheap gin.
Oh, wow. Wow, that sounds fascinating. So how exactly do you get, what was it, the internet in your underground lair?
Down a big tube.
Really?
Yes. It's quite a big tube. It's rather broad. And there's a special piece of ribbon around it. It's called the broadband.
That's handy. That's
very
handy.
Very good.
Can't do much on the internet without broadband.
No, you can't.
Now, I'm sure some of our listeners are wondering exactly what steampunk is. For those people who don't know what it is, John, can you describe what steampunk is?
It's something we've been trying to do for more years than I care to remember. And the bottom line now, as we say, steampunk is that which is steampunked. And how do you steampunk something? Well, that's down to the individual steampunk. It's a cop-out, but basically take a healthy dash of Victorian, a little bit of Edwardian, some science fiction, throw in some fantasy, a little bit of tinkering, recycling, shake it all up, pour it out, and then see what you've got, and that's steampunk.
That's the best description I've ever heard of it, actually. That is brilliant.
That's awesome.
What does steampunk mean to you, Lady Elsie?
Steampunk is what I do. It just is. Without steampunk, I would be very lost. I would be sitting home alone, maybe with my cat. But I don't have a cat. I have gin instead. And friends and cake and gin. A social scene and a music scene and a way of letting my imagination run wild a little bit. And not be totally on my own and marked out as a mad person. There are other steampunks around and we're not mad, we're normal. And in Lincoln, the normals are going to be outnumbered.
That's very true. I know. Where did you first come across steampunk yourself? How did this happen?
It was odd. We were both sitting at home, looking at our laptops and almost simultaneously said to one another, I found something new, something interesting.
Now,
our real jobs, we work in television. Lady Elsie's a costume designer and I'm an art director and I do a bit of presenting and things like that. And it was our own interests that had attracted us. Lady Elsie had found costumes and fashions online and I'd found trinkets and baubles and mechanical devices, and we both turned our laptops around and we were both looking at the same thing.
Oh, so. How amazing.
Serendipity.
Great minds think alike. Really.
Something like that, or we were just very bored in the winter of 2006.
the long, hard winter of 2006.
It was. Gin supplies were very low.
And from that, how did you come about thinking of the idea of creating Asylum? Because you have created, if I say in the best possible way, quite a monster here.
Well,
and I do mean
monster.
That in positively.
It really is Frankenstein's monster. And I actually did a post about that a few days ago saying I've seen this monster rise and take life and I'm just waiting for the mob to chase it out of Lincoln. We knew that the scene needed a social meet. It needed a way to get together and share things. And we'd organised some smaller meets. We did a flash mob at the Botanical Gardens in Birmingham, for example, and things like that. That was interesting. People had never seen lots of steampunks in one place before that. And then on the main forum, Brass Goggles, we were having a conversation across the country about where we could do an event. And we sort of threw a challenge down, didn't we?
We did.
The challenge was, if you can find the right venue, we will make something happen. And two of our friends who are now involved in running the event, Jim and Joe, or Warden Arkwright and Queen Victoria, they'd had their wedding reception in the lawn.
Wow.
Right.
So we went to the lawn and we had a look and we thought, this place was a Victorian lunatic asylum. Fate has smiled, and the rest history.
We found our spiritual home, and the asylum was born. The first event was 450 of us locked up in the asylum for a couple of evenings, a ball, and we weren't really sure who would come. There was a lot of people we'd met online, and they bought tickets, the Mad Things, and we had one of the best parties I think I've ever been to. And that was 7 years ago, and it just gets bigger and better every year.
Is it the biggest in Europe?
It's certainly the biggest in Europe, and depending on how you count it as a purely steampunk event, we think it's the biggest in the world.
Wow. I wouldn't be surprised.
It's certainly the longest running event now.
And I remember meeting you just before that first event, and we met at EasterCon in Bradford.
We did.
And you said to me then, oh, you'd really like this, because there's me in my corsets. You see, I was a goth that didn't know that I was really a steampunk either. And she knew. She saw me with my purple hair, and purple in your hair as well, as I remember, Karen. Is that right?
I think so, yes. I'm sure David will vouch for that.
Yes, I remember
Yeah,
that
there's
well.
Quite an interesting story there.
Don't go there.
And move you swiftly on, says David.
Moving swiftly on. So if people want to come along to the asylum this year, then what's the best way to do that at this point in time? It's the August Bank Holiday weekend.
It starts on Friday and runs through till Monday. There are three ways of joining in. You can just wander up there and enjoy the spectacle on the street.
Because there's lots of people there walking around, all in outfits and dressed up to the nines.
We've got a market in Castle Square. There's some street performance going on and things like that. So you can just come and enjoy that. Yep. In fact, we're decorating the whole street as well. That was meant
so
to be a secret. I've slipped it out.
Oops. Oh,
never mind.
So that's the easiest way. You can, one of our biggest venues is the castle. There's lots and lots going on in the castle over in the daytime of the bank holiday days. You can pay to get into the castle because it's one of their event weekends, and you can go in and just enjoy that. Or if you really want to enjoy the whole festival, you need a wristband. You can either have a one-day wristband or a weekend wristband. That gets you into the castle. Westgate, which is our literature and gaming strand. The Assembly Rooms, which is our main stage in our art exhibition.
Balegate Market, indoor which will be on Friday, Saturday and Monday.
There's just too much. We're running 5-6 venues and I lose track of it.
Tons of stuff. Tons of stuff. So people should just rock up to Lincoln, centre of Lincoln, up top of Steep Hill, Balegate, round by the castle, round by the cathedral, and all of those areas, and just enjoy.
Yep. And if you're not sure, you've never seen this before, at least come along just to see what exciting things people get up to, because honestly, you will love the costumes and you'll have a great time. And just before we leave Hair Doctor hanging there, Hair Doctor, can you quickly tell us what steampunk means to you?
The condensed version, I read Wells and Verne when I was a child, which I hasten to add wasn't in the 1800s. and then in the 1980s, there was the triumvirate of Californian authors, Powers, Blaylock and Jeter, who wrote what they called gonzo science fiction, which was eventually named steampunk, partly out of a joke, but that's another matter entirely. And then it sort of lay a little fallow with me. And then much in the same way with Lady Elsie and Major Tinker there, around the winter of 2006, I discovered the Brass Goggles Forum, and that was it, really. I had a new purpose in life. But I've been asked before what steampunk is. I like to imagine that perhaps the British Empire didn't fall. It evolved. The Commonwealth came into being. We all linked hands as friends around the world. We stopped sending small children up chimneys and subjugating other nations to our rather decadent rule. And the world is a much better place because we're all friends and we all wear top hats.
Sounds awesome to me. Thank you so much.
That's all right. You're welcome.
All-seeing eye, looking through the night, looking for the answers, using second sight. Do you see what you expected to see? Do you think that you can see me? All-seeing eye. Do you think that you have total control?
And that was All Seeing Eye by Crimson Clarks. Now, Herr Doctor, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
A little birdie just told me that you are a fellow of the VSS.
Oh, what does that mean?
What does it mean, indeed? Yes, the Victorian Steampunk Society. I believe it was called the Victorian Steampunk Society because someone already had Steampunk Society. What it means is you've made an outstanding contribution to the steampunk community.
Oh, fantastic. What do you get for that? Do you get a medal?
Yes.
And you better remember to bring it with you, Ian.
It's a bit like a Blue Peter badge. It gives you free access to the event. So if you don't bring your medal, Ian, your name's not on the list.
Oh, my.
I've got to remember where I put it first.
Oh, my word. And are you debuting any apart from your very small robot, is there any other nefarious inventions that you're debuting at the asylum?
Well, not debuting, but certainly a first trip beyond Watford is my replica Martian war machine.
Oh. Life size?
As in... It depends how close you stand to it. Again,
okay.
it's about a metre tall and 1/35th scale, which means in real life it will be about 35 metres tall.
Wow!
And as I'm a denizen of Woking, obviously I have some sort of an affinity with War of the Worlds. In fact, the small village I came from, the third cylinder knocked the church down.
Oh wow! Okay, I hope they've rebuilt it.
Oh yes. You wouldn't know it was an early 20th century reproduction of the original 12th century church. They did such a good job.
That's brilliant, isn't it? The technology is so
brilliant.
Good. That's very good. Very good.
Yes. And the other thing I'm going to be bringing along, I think, if I can find space in my vehicle, is the contraption I built for the Longitude Punk exhibition at the Greenwich Observatory, which finished about 6 months ago, which is my aerial beacon.
Well, we'll be looking forward to seeing that, Herr Doctor,
it's quite difficult to describe, so I won't.
Okay.
We'll save it for seeing that. And with that, we want to thank you so much for being on the show today, and we'll see
you at
Asylum Weekend.
Yep, I will see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Are you interested in video games? If so, be sure to join me, Jake, on the Cyber Den, your weekly dose of tech and games. Treat yourself to the latest news, interviews, some brilliant music, and much more. After all, it is approved by...
me, Duke Nukem.
Kane from Command and Conquer.
Agent 47.
Colonel Roy Campbell.
And more. So join me, Jake, on the Cyber Den. Every Wednesday, 10 till 12.
On Siren FM, 107.3.
A sky of stars implore.
through June.
You're listening to The Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
And that was Lindsay Gold's Through June, her new song. And now we have on the phone Robin Pearce, our Wales correspondent. I almost forgot where you were then, Robin. Hello.
Wales correspondent. I'm here.
You're now our Wales correspondent.
And it's rainy and it's miserable.
Oh, no. So not sunny Wales, as we'd like to think it always is.
Not sunny Wales. It's more of Transylvanian Wales, if I'm honest with you.
Oh, gosh. Oh, well, what's your review today, Robin? Tell us all about Finders Keepers.
I have been reading a book, Stephen King's latest book, called Finders Keepers. It is, in a way, a sequel to a book that he published a year ago called Mr. Mercedes. So-called because, well, it was a crime thriller, a cat-and-mouse crime thriller, where an assailant used a Mercedes to ram into a queue of people, killing as many as he could, and a retired cop is on his tail. That was an excellent story, well told, not horror in the conventional sense, and nothing supernatural happened, and he's followed it up with Finders Keepers, which was released about a month ago. Now then, you're a writer, and a very fine one. Let me ask you a question. What is the more important, the writer or the writing?
The writing.
Ooh, that's a pretty bad answer, because that's where the obsessive fan, who is the centre point of Finders Keepers, comes from. He has, for a few years, been following the great American novelist, John Rothstein. And John Rothstein has created a fictional character called Jimmy Gold.
Oh.
Now, this fan doesn't like the way the books are going. Doesn't like the way that the character seems to have sold out. So in 1978, he breaks into Mr. Rothstein's home with two thuggish friends of his and not only robs Mr. Rothstein, but executes him with a bullet to the head.
Gosh.
Now, after killing his assailants, sorry, not his assailants, his compadres, he realizes that what he has is not only several thousand dollars worth of stolen money, but also Rothstein's notebooks containing all his future plans for the Jimmy Gold character. But they're hot. He can't sell them anywhere. In the meantime, he gets arrested for another crime involving rape and has to do a lot of prison time, about 30 years worth. While he's in prison, the stuff that he stole, the notebooks, are found by another fan. Now, the original robber, a guy called Morris Bellamy, is let out of prison, and he's more deranged and obsessive than ever. And he needs to find his notebooks and his money, which this kid has. And he's willing to stop at nothing, including slaughtering the young man's parents, his old family, to get these books back because he is that obsessive. As I say, it's not horror in the conventional sense, but if you're in the writing game, Sam, you are going to be scared.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think sometimes, though, a kind of home invasion type story can be more terrifying because it is more realistic and could happen. So I think that's why those sorts of stories are more horror sometimes than supernatural horror.
I have been watching horror movies since my teens. I have a room full of DVDs and tapes that I've collected over the years. Home invasion stories are the one genre, subgenre, if you like, that I will not watch because, basically, it freaks the heck out of me.
You do, me too.
I agree with you, Robin.
I completely get that.
Me too. Yeah.
And I wish to God they would stop making them because you never know who they're going to give the wrong idea to.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Oh, I know what you mean. So that's fantastic. So that's Stephen King's new one, Robin.
That's Stephen King's new one, but the ever-productive Mr. King is unleashing on the 3rd of November a book called The Bazaar of Bad Dreams, which is yet another collection of his short stories.
Wow.
Great.
Okay.
So ever since he announced his retirement and then changed his mind, he's actually become more productive than ever. But the quality's not slipping.
I don't believe he will ever give up. I really don't.
Well, once you start writing, you can't stop.
No, I once read, and you will relate to this, a quote where I can't remember who was being asked. I think it was a sci-fi author who was asked, why do you write? And the answer was, because it's easier than not writing.
Exactly, and I completely relate to that. I'm very antsy if I don't write, and I'm sure that a lot of other authors are.
Absolutely. If I watch a film and I don't write a review about it, I'm kind of like tearing the walls down.
Going back to reviews, Robin, what star rating have you given this book? How good was it?
Out of 5, I would give it a 4.5.
That's brilliant.
And the extra 0.5 came in because of the epilogue. He's given it such a twisted, messed up ending that takes you back into Mr. Mercedes territory.
Oh, gosh.
That this had better be a trilogy, or there will be a home invasion mounted by me.
Robin, stay with us. We're going to go over now to David, and we're going to discuss David's film of the month.
Thank you very much, Sam. And this month, we've all been thinking about and watching a rather nice steampunk film called League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Now, this was made in 2003, directed by a chap called Stephen Norrington. And the basic idea behind the film is that it's 1899, so just before the turn of the last century, and there's Professor Alan Quatermain, who's played by none other than Sean Connery. He's called out of retirement by the British government to help them defeat a plot by the nefarious Phantom to destroy Venice. Not quite sure why Phantom wants to destroy Venice, but that's what he wants to do. And helping him in this quest, he's got an assortment of the most unlikely people you might hope to meet. There's the Invisible Man, who's also called Rodney Skinner, who's played by an actor called Tony Curran. There's Captain Nemo, played by, and I'm not even sure I can pronounce this, Nasiruddin Shah, plays Captain Nemo. Mina Harker, from the Dracula novel, who's actually a vampire, who's played by Peter Wilson. There's Dorian Gray, he with the picture, who's played by Stuart Townsend. There's a chap called Tom Sawyer, played by Shane West. And finally, if all that wasn't enough, you've got Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, who's played by Jason Fleming. So all of these assorted people head off to Venice in Nemo's ship, the Nautilus, where they have various battles against tanks and thugs with machine pistols, and there's subterfuges. And finally we realise that it's actually the guy who hired them that is they are meant to defeat. And this is M, played by Richard Roxburgh. And his real motive was apparently to obtain specimens from each of the League members to create superpower formulas to sell to the highest bidders, as you do if you have all these superheroes running around. Along the way, there are some amazing chases and fights. The effects are incredible. Something that particularly stood out for me that I wanted to highlight was the effects for the Invisible Man are absolutely brilliant. And there's also a Jekyll and Hyde transformation, which takes place underwater.
Wow.
And I don't think I've ever seen that before in a film. And it's genius. It's brilliant. I mean, talk about take something that's hard to do in the first place and actually make yourself even harder for you, but still do it well. And then just as we think it's all over, M is revealed to be Moriarty, of course, because that's what happens. It's a fantastic film. It's got so much technology on display. It certainly is a steampunk adventure. So I had a great time watching it. I do like the film. I think it's fantastic. Lady Elsie, Karen, what do you think of the film?
Well, the visual aesthetics are definitely steampunk. Nemo's car is absolutely amazing. And I believe it was up for auction a short time ago. I don't think it's sold.
Really?
I think Hair Doctor couldn't afford to buy it. but I'm sure we could have a whip round.
We could
the styling is typically Victorian, being it set in 1899. But there's lots of modern touches that would be futuristic. Yes. So steampunk mashup, definitely.
Yeah.
Some of the settings they've used are beautiful. Venice is amazing.
Because they destroy half of it in the film,
yes,
don't they?
Yes, it all falls down.
It all falls down, yes.
So, but I believe it's been rebuilt. Maybe Hair Doctor had some sort of gadget.
Did,
that
yes.
he lent
like
them.
Like his local church.
But as a film, it's very enjoyable to watch, and definitely one I like to watch again because there's always something new that you notice in it.
You spot. Did you manage to see it, Patricia?
Oh, yeah. I love that movie. It is cheesy dipped in cheese. It's like, it's cheesier than a cheese toasty fondue. And it's one of my favourite movies of all time.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I think you have a really great time watching that film. That's the thing I love about it so much. I don't worry about, you know, I know exactly what you mean about being cheesy, but it's just a real romp, total adventure, action-packed.
What do you think, Robin? Did you manage to see it?
I did indeed. I love the idea of it. I love kind of a Victorian Justice League because I'm a big comic book fan, but unfortunately I've never read the Alan Moore written originals. I love the film. I love the sweeping sense of adventure from, you know, the plains of Africa to Venice to Mongolia. But I've got two problems with it. There's always one, isn't there?
There's always one. Yeah. Go on, mate.
And it's always me. I love the idea of the Nautilus rising up by the docks of London. Where do they fit it? It's like about five stories high.
They're not deep enough.
You're thinking too deeply there.
It must be able to cut through mud as well.
My favourite Nautilus is still 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea with James Mason, because that, to me, is more steampunk than
the little ship, small marble-panelled.
Yes, that's a wonderful film.
Would think any rain that way.
But the difficulty with that is
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Mr. Hyde, to me, looks like... He looks a lot like he did in the graphic novel, but he's impossibly top heavy.
Yeah.
He looks like the villain from the old Popeye cartoon.
Yeah, he's a cartoon character.
Bruno, was it? Brutus? Yeah. Brutus, was it?
Brutus or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. Bluto, wasn't it?
Bluto, that's the one.
Yes.
And you think, you know, with that sort of upper body musculature, you know, he looks like the Hulk on steroids.
I think you're thinking too hard. John had
what
a
were you
going to
say, John?
No, it was about the Nautilus. I love Disney's Nautilus from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. The only difficulty is, and Alan Moore actually commented on this about the movie, Nemo is meant to be an Indian prince. And so when they do all the styling in the League's Nautilus, there's loads of Indian influences in there. He's played by a subcontinent actor. He dresses in Indian clothes and things. Mason, in the 20,000 Leagues, sorry, he doesn't. He's not an Indian prince. And you know, if you're doing a homage to Verne, yeah, if you're doing a homage to Jules Verne, you've got to go back to the source material a little bit.
Yeah, because the one thing that I always get confused about with this film, and in fact, when Sam and I watched it the other night, we commented as well. We always get this kind of confused with Van Helsing, because they seem to be the same film with the same characters.
I think they're done by the same people, aren't they?
I'm
the film
sure
was done by the same
are.
People, I think. No?
I don't think so.
I don't think
they do have the same kind of aesthetic about them.
Ooh,
where
you see the
Victorian sort of characters and, you know, the multiple villains.
I think somebody's trying to ring you.
It's fascinating. I think we're gonna call a halt there. Yeah?
Yes.
So that's the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Do you want to give us your grade, Robin, before we let you go?
Out of 5, I'd give it a 3.
Okay. Thanks, Robin.
I'd probably
give
it about
much.
A 3 as well.
You
I
give
think.
It a 3?
Yeah.
Out of 5? Oh, I'd give it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, I'd go 4.
Oh, fantastic.
And 4 for me.
So there we go.
Yep.
And now, I think...
Before we do that, we'll just say thanks very much, Robin. We'll see you next time. Thanks again for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And now, we've got the gin song by the men that will not be blamed for nothing.
cheaper than porter, it's gin. It helps you get through all that life throws in. Gin!
And that was a gin song by the men that will not
Please
be playing
call me
for
back
nothing.
Again.
Hi, hi there, Josh. We've got you already.
Hello.
Hello, we've got Joshua Lou Friedman on the line.
Oh,
are you in
you.
LA this week before I screw it up and say that you're in LA and you're somewhere else? Josh? Uh-oh. Oh dear, we've lost him. But actually, let's go over to John, because John was just telling me some very interesting facts about the Men That Will Not Be Blamed For Nothing. Tell us what you just told me, John.
The Men That Will Not Be Blamed For Nothing is a reference to some graffiti from the Jack the Ripper case. That's where they get their name from, because the guitarist is a ripperologist, Andrew O'Neill. But Jack the Ripper, or whoever did it, figures in the sequential Alan Moore comics about the League That Will Not Be... The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
So we have this strange synchronicity in the show. Mm.
Well, unfortunately, we're not able to go to Joshua Lou Friedman this time because we're having problems with the phone. Really sorry, Josh. Hopefully we'll get you next month. But we were talking earlier about gin. I got myself a nice little bargain, but I don't think I'm allowed to say where from. And us naughty people have been drinking some slow gin today, so maybe that's why things are going wrong in this studio. I'm not quite sure. Any interesting facts about gin from our visitors?
Gin is one of the most popular drinks of the moment. There's an upsurge in small distilleries making small batch gins that you can find in your local supermarket, although this particular slow gin is one that I haven't heard of before, but tastes very nice, and I think it was available in the discount supermarket.
Now, yes. You make raspberry gin, don't you, which is...
Oh, tell us how you do that.
Oh, raspberry gin. You buy a supermarket cheap gin, add an amount of sugar, maybe a centimetre in the bottom, fill the gin bottle with raspberries, and then pour back into the bottle the gin that you took out. Leave it by the kettle, and every time you put the kettle on, give it a shake. 3 months, 6 months, it'll be ready to drink.
Wow.
And Lady Elsie's raspberry gin has been fought over.
Wow, I have to try some of that. Are you going to have some
of that
at Asylum this year?
There's always something in my hip flask, as I need to keep my voice lubricated.
It's medicinal, I get that.
Definitely,
absolutely.
Definitely.
And what were you going to ask, Patricia? Loads of them.
It's too late.
Well, that's the end of the Stone Tapes for this month. I want to say a huge thank you to Lady Elsie, to John Naylor, David J. Howe, to Gearheart Steampunk Review editor Patricia Ash, to Christy Bond, although she's not been very loud today. Say goodbye, Christy.
Bye.
And, of course, to Alex Levchuk, our producer. Thanks to Robin, and hopefully we'll see you next month, Josh. We'll see you again.